everybody. Welcome back to the show, Science Facts and Fallacies, episode 261. My name is Cameron English. I am your host, as always, joined again by Dr. Liza Dunn. Liza, what's going on? Nice to see you.
Hi, Matt. Good to see you. Happy Saturday.
It is a terrific Saturday indeed. I'm about to do some yard work. Love doing yard work. It's the best.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. My son is almost three, and he's in that stage where he likes to help. So I take advantage of that, and I like give him a broom. Like, here, sweep up this grass, kid. He's like, okay.
Then I'll go jump in some leaves.
There you go. Well, we're gonna do our show. We've got three stories as always. I want to say before we get started, our spaces on Twitter or X are awesome. We've done three so far. They are a lot of fun. They're just free-wielding discussions. We pick a topic, and then we just go off on whatever rabbit trail. We answer people's questions. I think we had several hundred people at the last one. We had about 20 people that were actually participating in the discussion from all over the world. It's awesome. So come be a part of that. It's on X with us every Friday right now. Yep. And we might adjust the schedule depending on who wants to come. So if you have thoughts on that, let us know. But it's usually... Oh, what's the time, Liz? Is it 2 o'clock?
It's 2 o'clock usually central time. Okay. We're actually probably going to move it maybe to noon so we can accommodate more people from Africa and Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. So follow us on Twitter. We'll give the handles at the end like we always do. And then let us know if there's a good time for you. And then if you have a topic, because we're open to just about everything.
And yeah, come ask us anything. So it'll be fun to talk.
Yes. Okay. Well, with that, let's get into our show here. Three stories, as always. First up, humans as frogs? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. claims that, RFK Jr. claims that unsubstantiated but perceived rise in male sexual dysphoria is driven by atrazine in our water supply. What a mess of a headline that was. Next up, there's enough common ground for organic, regenerative, and conventional agriculture to live in harmony. And finally, challenging bioethical taboos. Chinese scientist who modified the genes of human embryos to protect them from HIV reopens his lab. Okay, let's start off with a fun story, Liza. So this is a very short article. It's by a website I'm not familiar with. It's called It's the Russian Stupid. And it's all about some really old claims. This is from the early 2000s, but RFK, being the environmentalist he is, loves to recycle old ideas that just should have died. And he's talking about an herbicide called atrazine that was alleged, I believe it was in 2002, this originated, Liza. Mm-hmm. This was Tyrone Hayes, who's a biologist at UC Berkeley at the time. He has disgraced himself in recent years with some of the, at one point he was attacking female scientists at Syngenta, which manufactures atrazine, making all kinds of weird sexual harassment themed comments. And anyways, he's an odd guy if you want to go look into him. But originally he published a study in the Proceedings of the National Academies of Science, which we later found out was peer reviewed by one of his buddies. And the claim was that exposing frogs to a relatively low dose of this herbicide interfered with their sex hormones and actually turn them from male to female. And I believe this is the origin of Alex Jones's, they're turning the frogs gay.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So this is the pseudoscientific baseline for all of these fun memes that you've seen of Alex Jones. But RFK Jr., being the gift that keeps on giving, brought this up in a recent video. And so there isn't much to this story except to make fun of him in this case. There's a clip from YouTube of him actually saying this. And there's a helpful note at the bottom from Genetic Literacy Project that just explains, and you can get into this, Liza, because this is your expertise, just explaining that the amount of atrazine you're exposed to in food and water, as we've said with other chemicals, is infinitesimal. It's tiny. It's not going to have any impact because the dose makes the poison. Take it away. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's, once again, it's conspiracy theory level. Yeah. Propaganda. And the thing is that he's made similar claims. If I'm correct, I think I've heard a similar claims about glyphosate on Joe Rogan. And so it's what he's doing is he's sowing doubt in people about the benefits and safety of very, very well understood chemicals that are critical for agriculture and our food supply. So you're seeing propaganda being spread by trial attorneys, which is kind of interesting. And once again, frogs aren't people. They have a completely different way of metabolizing things. Yes, you know, some reptiles have some temperature kind of things that can change sex in an egg. But human beings, their sexual phenotype is determined by the sperm, right? So you are determined to be female or male depending on whether the sperm that fertilizes the egg has an X chromosome or a Y chromosome, and then you partner up with the egg's X chromosome. So the gametes determine sex from the get-go in humans, and so that's not going to be affected by infinitesimally small doses of atrazine. And in fact, I read a study, human exposure to atrazine is actually relatively limited because when you're using it on farms, it's not because it's a terrible herbicide, but it's got relatively restricted uses. So it's a restricted use pesticide, so you're not going to see it in the general population. And I think I saw a study recently where it looked at, it might have even been NHANES, where they looked at 1,000 kids and couldn't even find traces of metabolites or anything like that. So people have very relatively low exposure to this in any situation. So the claim that a infinitesimally small concentration of a chemical that people are not exposed to generally is causing this gender dysphoria in children and making young men gay is actually kind of appalling. it's taking away the idea that there's a biology behind homosexuality that exists, and it's one of the phenotypes of human existence. So I think that saying that chemicals do that, it takes away the humanity in people. And then atrazine is excreted. If people are even exposed to it, it's metabolized and excreted within 12 hours. So it really has very, very little effect on humans.
Yeah, there's a blueprint. It doesn't matter what the chemistry is or what the exposure is or any of the relevant toxicological details. All you need to know is Aaron Brockovich Redux, right? There's a big company, bad chemical, innocent victim, wash, rinse, repeat. This is the tort lawyer, Bible. This is what they do, right? That's all this really is. It is funny.
And he's done the same thing with vaccines. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's done that. It's the same. It's interesting to see in our spaces, people have this epiphany. Oh, he's done this with vaccines. And oh, maybe what he's saying about ag might not be right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. One thing I guess we can say that is relevant and probably more important is that even though people don't buy into these dramatic claims, the EPA very recently, I don't know if they actually put it in place yet, but they proposed a rule that would lower the amount of atrazine to a point where a farmer effectively can't use it. Because if they were to use it, it would show up in the groundwater in very low amounts nonetheless, but it would be above this threshold that EPA is considering. So even if these ideas are over the top, they generate concern primarily from the risk of litigation, that it drives federal regulators to propose really dumb rules, you know? So again, this is one of those examples where the consequences are real. The scare stories are phony. They don't pose a risk, but in order to avoid controversy or lawsuits or what have you, the people in charge will respond to it.
Which is unfortunate because it takes another very important tool out of farmers' hands, right? So, you know, once again, we have 10,000 years of experience with organic farming and 50 years of food security in the West because of scientific advances in agriculture, and this is one of those important tools that farmers can use to control weeds. And I think that the people underestimate that they think food grows on shelves.
That's right. There is no hot pocket tree out there in nature, everyone. That actually has to be, the ingredients have to be grown and combined. And there's a lot of expertise that goes into getting your food to you.
That's exactly right. And a lot of regulation to make sure that you are not going to be exposed to anything that's, you know, unsafe.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, we'll return to Mr. Kennedy in the near future because he never stops saying things that are just ridiculous. Yeah. Next story. This is a really good one, though, and I'm glad to have read it, and I hope everyone else reads it. This is by Tim Durham, who is, I believe he's a plant pathologist and a farmer, is his academic background. But this is from Ag Daily originally, and it's called "Can Organic and Conventional Farming Coexist Peacefully?" by Tim Durham. Ag Daily is a great site, by the way, incidentally, if you want to understand more about agriculture. It's written by people who are farmers and people who are in journalism, but they have backgrounds in agriculture. And so if you want to understand more about pesticides or fertilizers or the basics of farming or any particular issue, start here, because this is a practical place to get that information. And Tim's a great resource in that sense. But here he's talking about this sort of phony war that has been launched between organic and conventional agriculture. And so he starts out and he says, you know, most farmers are conventional in that they use synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, they use modern technology, and they have effectively been picked on by these organic at any cost people, the trade groups and the organic food lobby who they've done it effectively to a certain extent. They've tried to cut out this special market for themselves where they get to sell you magic organic food that isn't any healthier, isn't any safer, but because of their marketing and because they have attacked conventional food production so well, there's a segment of the public that thinks that their organic carrots for some reason are better for them. And they're willing to pay $3 extra, you know, for a bundle of carrots or whatever. So Tim takes exception to this and he says, you know, people like me that are conventional growers, this is ridiculous. We don't want to harm anyone. As we've said a lot of times, Liza, farmers don't want to harm you. They eat their own food. They don't want to poison their own fields. They don't want to make their own family members sick. And that's what they would have to do if this organic scare story were true. So he goes on and says, that's not the thing. But I think his conclusion is interesting in that he's saying we should sort of get rid of these labels, this conventional and organic. And I think he calls it reconciliation agriculture. And one of the interesting points he makes is that, you know, there's a lot of overlap here. You know, so there are conventional farmers that use cover cropping and there are organic farmers that use very toxic pesticides. Now, if they're used appropriately, they're fine. Don't get me wrong here. But he's basically saying we need to call this war over because you're picking on people who are just trying to make a living and the organic side is trying to claim out this special halo effect for themselves and it's non-existent. So we just need to have farming, I think is his point. But what did you take away?
That's right. Yeah, that's totally my takeaway. I think I like the idea of reconciliation. I think that it's important to try to move on. Farmers are under a lot of stress. You know, a very small proportion of our population farms, and they feed all of us. And they are under environmental stress. They're under financial stress. They've got all sorts of decisions that go into what crop they're going to grow and things like that. And if that crop fails, it really has a big impact on their ability to, one, continue farming, but two, their mental health. And so I think that this is an artificial battle. Once again, there's nothing really wrong with organic farming. It just can't reliably feed, a huge, huge population. And conventional farming and then, you know, farming with biotech have actually been able to accelerate the benefits of modern agriculture and you provide more food with less land and less inputs for more people. And so I think demonizing that doesn't do anybody any good. And I agree. I think that we should be able to, make up and be friends and try not to label all of this stuff because it creates a false dichotomy in people's minds. And I like to say, sort of say, you know, think about it as, you know, united we stand and divided we fall. And we want to protect the agricultural sector as best as we can.
Yeah, I had a listener to the show reach out to us after we talked about the lack of environmental benefits of urban farming. There is that study we discussed a few weeks ago. It was in Nature.
Yeah.
And he reached out, and I had a great conversation with him. I won't say who it was because I don't have permission for that. But one of the observations he made is that, you know, after 35 years of being a conventional grower, he went into organics and working in an urban environment with local gardeners and trying to help them get their operations off the ground. And he said, you know, there were a lot of people, they just wouldn't even interact with me because of my background in conventional farming. You know, and it's just one of the silliest things when you start to look into the details of it. So one thing, I don't know if we've discussed on the show, but one thing that's been, you know, thrown out there in the agriculture world is letting organic farmers grow CRISPR or gene edited crops.
Yeah.
Because organic describes your growing methods. It has nothing to do with the genetics of the plant. So if you have a plant that's disease resistant, for example, you could grow that organically, even if it's been genetically modified, in quotes, in air quotes. You know, so all that to say, there's so much overlap there. The fight here is a phony. It's a political one. It's because there are certain groups that want to benefit. They want to extract benefits from certain regulations, and they're going to lie to you in order to do that. That's the gist of it.
And the unfortunate spillover from that is that people become scared to eat fruits and vegetables because they're afraid of the way the fruits and vegetables were grown. So if you're talking about people who should be eating more of a plant-based diet, and then you're scaring them away or making it cost prohibitive for them to do that, that doesn't achieve the goal that you've got in terms of human health.
That's right. You know, you will get people, they won't feed their kids cucumbers and apples, but they will feed them Twinkies and frozen pizzas.
That's right.
Because those don't have pesticides. You know what I mean? This is the silly place you get. And over time, I don't know if there's any good data on this, but one idea that's been put forward by some scientists is that over time, you scare people out of eating produce, and that could have long-term health effects, like potentially cancer or type 2 diabetes or... You know, there's all kinds of consequences that come from displacing nutritious food with, you know, calorie dense, but nutritionally empty products.
That's right. So especially because you get all sorts of labels on those too, talking about the different benefits.
Yes.
Fat free, or you know, the labeling stuff has gotten way out of hand, I think.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do for a while was to just go through the grocery store while I was shopping and find the dumbest products with organic certification. So like there's gummy bears and there's chocolate milk and there's, you know, soda that's made with all natural sugar. You know, it's like it's just a marketing fad, right? If you can make gummy bears, right, it's just gelatin and sugar, right? But you can make that from animal fat. So if you, it's all natural, all organic.
No. That's exactly right. Well, that's like the non-GMO label on, you know, things on salt and water and things without DNA.
Right. And kitty litter. That was a thing for a while.
I should tell you where that,
yes.
That's about right. That should be a,
yeah.
Right?
So all that to say, just pure silliness. Farming is farming. And it's a good principle because a lot of people will tell you this, like when it comes to the breeding method, you use whatever works best. So, like wine grapes, for example, you will combine rootstock with different kinds of grape varieties. And that, like, grafting is an ancient technique. I think it's like 1650 BC. I think if I remember Kevin Folta's paper, we talked about this a few months ago. But basically, grafting is an ancient technique, but it's still widely used today because it's the best way to achieve the trait that you want for certain fruit crops and certain wine grapes and that kind of stuff. So it doesn't matter if it's old, doesn't matter if it's new, you just use what works. And should be the guiding principle here. Okay, let's leave that there. Final story of the day. This has been our hobby horse of late, Liza, which is human genome editing and germline editing more specifically. So this is from Japan National Daily. And it's a translated story, by the way. So if you read this, there might bite me some weird language, just an FYI, to Google Translate. So, but the story is called Chinese Scientist Jailed for Designer Babies Renews Genome Editing Research. And this scientist, he was all over the headlines in 2018. His name, and I'm going to butcher it, it's He Jian Q. I think it's somewhat something how you pronounce that. But he came to fame because he genetically engineered embryos, and he made these twin girls immune to HIV. So the father, I believe, had HIV, and in order to prevent it from being passed on, he edited the genomes of these two embryos, and then they were implanted through normal IVF, and then they were born. And as far as anyone knows, I think they're perfectly healthy. There were three kids, but the two the two twins are the same age, they're twins, right? So everything's fine. I think they're in kindergarten now. But this guy went to jail for 2 or 3 years, and he had to pay the equivalent of $430,000 in fines to the Chinese government. And we can talk about the significance of that in a little bit. But in essence, he's out of prison. He's back. He's opened two laboratories. He's back doing his research. He says he's complying with all national and international restrictions on human genome editing. He says he was a little too, I forget the word he uses, but he was premature in doing that original experiment that brought him to fame. He wasn't clear on, you know, why it was a mistake. It was one of those apologies where he's like, listen, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that way about what I did. That was not my intention to make you feel like it was that sort of an apology. But anyways, this guy's back out and doing his work. And, you know, there's lots to talk about here, Liza, but what do you think here?
Yeah, I think it's really, really kind of interesting. First of all, he is going to gene edit embryos, and one of the places he's going to do it is in Wuhan, which is fascinating, right? His interest is in gene editing embryos to get rid of the genes that trigger familial Alzheimer's and Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Which, you know, when people talk about those kinds of things, they sort of go, oh, why wouldn't you want to cure those diseases? Those are devastating diseases and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's interesting, and that's where the research is leading us. But we don't know what the interplay of genes are in embryos entirely and how they will progress over decades. With those with that gene interplay, so he said he's not going to implant those embryos to have them be born. So I don't know how he can predict what the outcome is in the long run. But there are things that you have to be careful with these kinds of things. So you can get double-stranded DNA breaks and repair problems with DNA when you've got this. And I think that those repair mechanisms could possibly introduce, mistakes in the DNA that you can't quite predict when you're talking about, when you're talking about the long-term effects of this. Now, I don't want to downplay the idea of how it could be really useful to correct for fatal illnesses in children. I think that, I think he's an optimist, and I think he is maybe well-intended, but when you get into things like editing the embryo for looks or intelligence, then you're getting into more of a questionable area where you don't know how those genes interplay and how those genes work out in the long run. So for people who are listening, and most of you probably know this, but genes are recipes for proteins that you need as building blocks for your body. If you have a mutation in them, you can have abnormal proteins, and those abnormal proteins can cause things like cancer, or they can wind up causing Alzheimer's because you get abnormal protein folding in the brain. And so a variety of different diseases. So it's admirable to want to fix those things. But if you're doing it for purely cosmetic purposes and you don't understand how the genes interact with each other for those things, you don't know what the off-target effects are going to be. And so I think you got to be very careful with these things.
I really love the example of this guy because there was a framing that was brought to this discussion in, I guess it was after after this, but especially in 2020 when the Nobel Prize was awarded for CRISPR, for the scientists that discovered it. But there was this sort of discussion like, listen, you know, we understand why you're a little hesitant about us editing the fabric of humanity, but we are the big brains. We're the United Nations. We're the NIH. We understand these things. So, you know, we're going to let you speak, and then we're going to move forward with this perfectly regulated technology, and it's going to be great. And then this guy pops up out of the blue, and he's like, I made two kids that can't get HIV. Booyah! Right? Like, he just showed up, and he sort of demonstrated the point that we've been making over the last couple weeks on this show, which is that you're not going to be able to account for a lot of the changes. There's a lot of unknowns here, but you're not going to be able to control everything that goes on, right? So you might put in some place, some international agreement, but all it takes is just one rogue guy in a lab somewhere to go, no, we're going to go faster, right? So it's, you know, and I mean, not to be dramatic here, but if you think of a technology like nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. once those were developed, whether you think that was a good thing or not, they proliferated. Countries all over the yep. world got them. And the only thing it seems that keeps, you know, us or anyone else from, you know, blowing up the other side of the planet is that they can do it back, right? So
they can do it back. Right.
So there's this mutually assured destruction, but that doesn't exist with this, right? It seems to me like if you have one country that employs this en masse for a certain purpose, the other country has no choice but to, you know what I mean? And we're a long way from that, but these are the sort of things that are being exposed right now. These are the things that are going to happen, you know?
And you don't have consent of the person that is going to be affected.
Mm-hmm. Nor can you ever get it. Nor, that's the whole point.
And you never get it. Yeah. And so what kinds of tweaks are you making with it? And so it's a very delicate ethical question. Because once again, nobody wants somebody to suffer from a terrible disease, but you know, sometimes heterozygosity for disease. So what you inherit one allele, one set of genes from the mom and one gene from the dad. Sometimes that has protective effects, like in malaria, you know, the sickle cell trait, if you only have one of the genes from your mom or your dad, can protect you from malaria. What are you undoing that evolution built? And once again, I wouldn't wish sickle cell on anybody, so I'm not trying to defend that, but it's there for an evolutionary purpose. And same thing with cystic fibrosis, which I wouldn't wish on anybody. There's an evolutionary purpose for it. And we kind of think we know what those are. So they're protective. So what are, if for the multiple genes that we don't know that have a protective effect, this technology is a little bit too early for prime time. I'm 100% on board for curing people of sickle cell or of cystic fibrosis. And if we can do that using these techniques, these are wonderful. But germline mutations that we don't know the implications of, I think we would need to be cautious about.
Yeah, one of my favorite examples is, I think they're called pleiotropic genes, but basically you have genes that control multiple traits. So you yes. may know that one gene controls a particular trait. So you go in and you yep. edit it and you go, oh, now I have the trait I want. But then on, you know, later in life, you might have some other change that you induced and you have no idea until it shows up. Right. So it's one thing if you were just doing this to yourself, right. It's sort of like personal yeah. drug use. Like if you want to hang out in your house and do hard drugs, you know, I guess. Right. But that's not what's happening. You know, you are changing people that aren't born yet. That's a really big problem. And the other, and one more thing, and I'll stop talking because I just get going on this. When it comes, like, people have been really critical of opposition to vaccine mandates. And they're like, how dare yes. you put your freedom over the public health? I'm like, this is why it's a problem. This is why you can't have sort of like this techno-medical establishment that dictates everything, is because you get technologies like this that come along and the people that are in charge go, oh, I told you what to do with vaccines. Now I'm going to tell you that you can't have sex to reproduce. And there are people seriously saying this. I did not make that up, right? You can't. Yeah. You can have sex, but you can't have children. You're going to use embryo selection and gene editing. That way we're going to get all diseases are going to be gone. And the new future is here. And we have AI and booyah. It's this great new thing. Welcome to paradise.
Yes, it's brave new world, right? It's brave new world. And it's really interesting that those same people will be very, very concerned about epigenetic changes that on exposures to teeny tiny concentrations of chemicals, right? Oh my gosh, you've put a methyl group on a histone, and you've opened up a gene, and that gene can be expressed, and that's really, really dangerous. Or you've shut off a gene, and that gene, if it's P53, is not being expressed. And so that's very, very dangerous. So they're making this granularity of claims about epigenetics that they don't know about, right? And taking it and like, oh, no, it's all going to be fine if we fix it ourselves, if we tweak it. It's kind of an interesting little...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ironic. Yes.
And the other thing is, the paradox of it is, like, there are these people, they'll take the authority for themselves to dictate, like, enormous questions about the future of humanity, but they don't have the courage to tell certain people they're not allowed to use this. So, for example, you see this a lot, right? There are parents who will live vicariously through their kids, where it's like, I don't want to play football. I want to be a poet. It's like, you're playing football, right? There are people that do this. They groom their kids in that sense for all kinds of things. I see all these silly videos on X and on TikTok of parents going, I have four toddlers and they're all trans. All of them. What a coincidence, right? Right. This trait that shows up in the population at like 0.18% or whatever. All four of my kids, right? So the point is that like there are people, they will put things on their kids because they want them. And if this technology comes along and those people have the in political views or the in whatever the current thing is, the people in academia and in the government, they want to be part of the in thing too. So they won't tell people you're not allowed to do that, even if there are very severe consequences for their own children or for subsequent generations. So again,
that's right.
Pump the brakes for the third week in a row. Pump the brakes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Munchausen's by proxy,
yes,
does exist.
That's probably right. The best example. Explain what that is to people so everyone understands.
So Munchausen syndrome is a syndrome where people fake, it's a psychiatric thing. So they lead other people to believe that they have diseases, and they'll go to great lengths to do that. So for example, I had a friend when I was working in the concert industry who was taking care of a woman who had, who purportedly had leukemia, and she'd go to the hospital all the time. She'd have seizures all the time. Terrible situation. He was very, very attentive, this, that, and the other, and finally took her to the hospital in the throes of some emergency and asked the doctor about her leukemia and the status of her leukemia. And the doctor's like, what? She doesn't have leukemia. And he was absolutely, he had spent thousands of dollars on her, taking care of her, this, that, and the other. So that's Munchausen syndrome. Now, that's one thing. Munchausen's by proxy is when an adult, often a mom, and it's interesting, a lot of them are actually healthcare workers. So they have a background in understanding biology and medical issues. Winds up having their child present with multiple different illnesses, and they will go to great lengths, and it's abuse what they do, and it's recognized that they eventually get discovered making kids sugar high or a variety of different things. They eventually get discovered, but it's a form of abuse where the mother derives some, not just mother, sometimes it's father, derives some kind of psychiatric gain from bringing her child to the hospital over and over again with multiple different illnesses. And it's quite dramatic, and I think we're seeing a lot of it these days.
Isn't there are cases where they actually expose their kids to harmful substances? They actually physically injure them in some way so they can show up and go, my kid, you know, drank
my any kid's or septic. Whatever. Yeah. My kid, yes. Yeah. Also, it's a problem. Yeah.
I can imagine someone going, well, we'll edit that out. We'll edit the genes out for that. There we go. See, we're solving the problem. Okay. That's enough. Right. Enough. I'm done. There you go. Go check out these stories and read about this. There's a lot of interesting stuff. We mentioned Eugenics and Other Evils by G.K. Chesterton last week. The Abolition of Man by C.S. Lewis is another great one. Just foundational books that cover this. We're good. So follow us on X. It's at Dr. Liza MD, at CamJ English. Show up to our spaces. They're great. They're basically like this podcast, except they're way longer and there's way more people involved, and it's a lot of fun.
And you can talk and ask us questions, and we can go all sorts of different topics. We'll try to stay on the topic that we're covering, but if you have a question about something else, that's a burning question, we'll answer it.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's awesome. And it goes directions that we don't think of. People bring up great ideas. And before I jump off here, we have people show up and ask questions. They get the answers from experts and they go, hey, thanks. That makes a lot of sense, you know? So we're always going on the show about, you know, you can change people's minds if you just communicate with them instead of hitting them on the head with a hammer and telling them what they're going to do. You can actually convince them. Exactly. It works. Right. It works. People respond rationally when you give them facts sometimes. So there you go. Okay. Sure, well, we'll wrap it up. Thank you for joining us as always, and we will see you next week.
All right. Bye.